지리 지도 제라 자고 미기 종거의 귀지에 되느니 내제 소대 배제 주세
수부 그술 전담기 땜바 남바샤보로 숨 대니.
So on what basis the two Torahs are classified and the number of divisions, the significance of these divisions, and the explanation of each division. So within the third subsection that So only noble entities, are classified into two truths, and then first, and then second is although the two truths share same nature, the isolates are different. And then the explanation of each division, conventional truths and ultimate truth, and the showing the certainty of truths being two in number. The literal meaning of conventional and truth, the definition of conventional truth, the divisions of conventional. And persons who have, regarding the first, the persons who have abandoned ignorance, perceive effectors, forms, and so on as mere conventionalities. For the person who grasps at true existence, since the eyes of their grasping at true existence, since in the eyes of their true existence, effectors exist truly, they are known as conventional truths. Conventional truths are not established by grasping a true existence. It is not just because they form the perspective of grasping a true existence, something exists truly, that it is established as a conventional truth. From the perspective of those who have overcome grasping at true existence, conventionality alone is positive, not true existence. However, from their perspective, conventional truth is perceived through others. The faultless definition of the conventional truth is any phenomenon that. And so, please read through, and we are on teaching the ultimate truth. Explaining the meaning of ultimate and of truth, explaining the definition of an ultimate truth, and explaining the divisions of ultimate truth. So, regarding the first, since it is the meaning perceived by a mind focusing on emptiness and its ultimate best, it is ultimate meaning. And since it is unmistaken, it is called truth. And then regarding explaining the definition of an ultimate truth, it has two parts, the actual meaning and rejecting qualms. The first one, regarding the first one, it says the irrefutable definition of an ultimate truth is any phenomenon that, while being recognized by valid cognition as ultimate, is found by valid cognition of the ultimate. Although anything that exists as posited by conventional minds is as existing, not everything that conventional minds posit necessarily exists. In the present system, truth, cessation, and nirvana are considered to be ultimate truths, yet their existence is confirmed by conventional truth. In the superior wisdom of Buddha, knowing reality, one distinguishing appearance and perception of emptiness, the perception has no duality. Some assert that nirvana is not a noble entity and that a Buddha level is nothing to know. And that at the Buddha level there is nothing to know, in which case all the efforts made to attain such a state of ignorance would be pointless. When it is said that their minds do not move, it refers to wrong thinking. Objects do not appear to Buddha's natural perceptions as existing truth, but truly, but whatever what appears to others does appear to them. All these appear to Buddhas because they are omniscient. Although for Buddha's superior wisdom that knows reality and diversity, these are of one nature. The former is known as reason consciousness and the latter consciousness of the conventional, according to the way the object is perceived. Therefore, although two objects of two kinds of perception are not mutually exclusive, it is asserted that the two subjects are entirely mutually exclusive. The explanation of the division of the ultimate truths. Ultimate truths are classified into 16. If condensed, it is certain that there are two kinds of selflessnesses. two kinds of selflessness. As for the terms actual ultimate and consistent ultimate, the greater, the great followers of Samtantrika tenets assert this. Although Tibetans refer to them with terms concordant and non-concordant, the interpretation of formal terminology is that they refer to non-conceptual, non-conceptual perceptions of ultimate. All along with the objects, the Samtantrika interpretation posits that the former two are actual ultimates and the latter two consistent ultimates. Further, more of the two elaborations, that of true existence and that of duality, neither is found in the former perception, but duality is found in the latter. Similarly, there are two emptinesses that are objects. From the perspective of the former subject, the two kinds of elaborations are absent. The latter is established as an ultimate by mere lack of true existence, and then showing the certainty of the truth as being two in number, since something is either mistaken or unmistaken, and there is no third possibility for knowable entities, there are definitely only two truths. The divisions of insights, differentiation and complete differentiation, each divides into two. Investigation analysis, there are four from the angle of nature, arising from analytic discrimination from thorough seeking and from science that are asserted to be categories of insight from the angle of the three doors. The six bases sought by thorough seeking are meanings, effectors, characteristics, categories, times, and reasoning. In brief, by the six kinds of seeking, the four kinds of insight in terms of nature are attained. It is taught in the listener's level that insight too has the four kinds of attention, tight focus, and so on. So how to meditate on insight is explained in outlines explaining the meaning of meditating on insights based on serenity. In that system, determining which path belongs to which vehicle, greater or lesser, and then third one, explaining how to actually meditate on insight based on serenity. So we are finishing this text. This holiness is almost to the end of this text. How to train in the Vajrayana on page 108. So it's may the sun rays of this effort's virtue completely dispel darkness in all beings' minds, and may I be certain to reach the supreme state, the fruit of completing the good path that delights the conquerors. This work called the essence of all sublime discourse, the definitive door to practice, is drawn from the stages of the path of enlightenment. It was composed by the one known as the master of altruism, the great meditator Du Wangpo, of white sunrise in Zedong. May it ensure the preservation, spread and growth of Buddha's teaching over a long period of time. So there's a dedication at the end of this text where it gives some prayer and dedication for the publication of the book.
Bad at
So we have finished. Now let's go to the on page 143, a practical exposition of stages of the path, the easy path to travel to omniscience by Benjamin Lobson Chögin, the omniscient one, and in page in the other book that you got last year. Go to page. With regard to this text, I got the transmission from Tejan Rinpoche, Gyabje Tejan Rinpoche, and then I also got the transmission of Nyurlam, also from Tejan Rinpoche. The fifth Dalai Lama's text from Gyabje Tejan Rinpoche. So I think that there is, it would be good to combine the essence of refined gold and also the lum, the easy path or the bliss path of bliss. So I wonder if I should also combine here the swift path of which written by one of the Panchen Lamas. So perhaps I would start with this easy or the path of bliss to travel to omniscience and then go on to the fifth Dalai Lama's text and then the Panchen Beldenish's text. So read through the text. At the feet of the Venerable and Holy Masters and Divisible from Shakyamuni Vajradhara, I pay homage continuously. Out of your great compassion, I pray to you to care for me. The exposition of the stage of the path of enlightenment, the profound method leading to fortunate beings to Buddhahood, has two parts: how to rely upon spiritual master, the root of the path, and having relied upon them, how to progressively train your mind. And so, as it is said, to cultivate bodhicitta, so here we should do that. So it says the first has two parts: how to conduct the actual meditation session, what to do between meditation sessions. The first has three parts. And so since we are doing this kind of practice of this particular the practice given here in this text, in accordance with the Tantra, we need to have the understanding of emptiness. And from within the state of emptiness, then we should have the visualization of transforming ourselves into deities. And then within that, you should do the practice. For the preliminaries, so the first has three parts: the preliminary actual meditation, conclusion. From the for the preliminaries, in a place. So read through the text, please. Having said, in a place you find pleasant. Having sat on a comfortable seat in the 8-point posture, in whatever position is comfortable, examine your mind well. Then, in especially with your state of mind, think. So, in space in front of me, on a precious throne, both high and wide, borne by great lines, on a seat formed by multicolored lotuses and by moon, this index is my spiritual master, so kind in the form of conqueror Shakyamuni. And then it says, at the end of this passage, I in turn, at the thought of their compassion, virtue, have great faith in me. And so one first visualizes the objects of refuge here, and having done that, think, like this, I and all sentient mothers, sentient beings, my mothers, from beginning's time until now have continuously undergone all the suffering of cyclists in general and those of the three royal lower realms in particular. Nevertheless, it is still difficult to fathom the depth of depth and breadth of this misery, and now that I have attained a choice human life, so difficult to attain, so meaningful once acquired, if I do not realize supreme liberation in which on the all the sufferings of samsara are overcome, Guru Buddha hood. Guru Buddha, then once again I will have to experience the various torments of cyclic existence and in general, and those of the lower realms in particular, as I do not. So having here it says, having first meditated refuge, the spirit of enlightenment and the four immeasurable qualities, reflect upon the following, reciting it 7-21 times. So what they hear is first you and in you visualize the objects of refuge, and then in order to be able to benefit and help to other sentient beings who are limitless and infinite across the space, you do this. In particular, for the sake of all sentient beings, my mothers, or by all means, I will quickly, very quickly, realize perfect consummate Buddha. So here, the first saying quickly refers to within this lifetime, short lifetime of a degenerate age, and then very quickly refers to referring to like a 12 or 3 year, 3 month, and so forth retreat. And so to that end, I will now meditate on the stage of the Patana by means of profound practice, master deity yoga, guru yoga. So the deity yoga practice is done within the motivation of bodhicitta, and then particularly it is done with the understanding of emptiness. And so you have to understand what is meant by the equality of samsara and nirvana, and as it is said that what you have to meditate on is the emptiness of the nature of your mind and the nature of the master's mind as being not different. To that end, I will now meditate on the stage of the path by means of profound practice of guru yoga. So it is not, the importance is not completing the recitation of the number of prayers, but you have to actually have the good understanding of the different aspects of the path, like bodhicitta and so forth. The greater your knowledge, the greater you will have, broader your sense of understanding of these paths. Then visualize and recite from in space, in front of me, and so forth. Please read through. So up to, he is seated on Vajra posture above and behind him on a seat formed by a meticulous lotus and moon, and Sunday's victorious Vajradhara Sunday with master's blessed practice lineage. And so this has reference to someone on a particular, a specific practitioner in accordance with his or her physiological structure and the different prana energy and so forth flowing in the channels and chakras. So when we use the term blessed practice path, we should not understand that here is a really some the solid practice, but with regard to what is known as the extensively called vast lineage and the profound lineage of view, I mean, they are just for some kind of intellectual understanding. So all the different classic texts written by Master Nagarjuna and Asanga and so forth, these Indian masters are meant for actually the cultivating the whole path. And so it is wrong to think that there is some kind of a something called practice blessed practice lineage apart from this extensive or vast lineage of the conduct of bodhisattvas and the profound view. It is totally wrong to think like that. So on his right, the Venerable Maitreya, surrounded by masters of vast activity lineage, on his left, the Venerable Manjugosha, surrounded by the masters of profound lineage. In front of him is my spiritual, main spiritual master, so kind, surrounded by masters. So here the visualization is similar to what we find in the Guru Puja, Lama Chepa, with whom I have a spiritual relationship. Surrounding them are tutelary deities, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, heroes, heroines, and assembly of Arya Dharma protectors. In front of them, on exquisite stands, are their own teachings in the form of books of light. They are sent to outwards. So here you can actually think about the triple sattva in the case of Lama and the deities. So you first have the visualization of your Lama, and at his heart is Guru Shakyamuni, and then at so the master is in the form of Shakyamuni, and then at his heart is Vajradhara, and at the heart of Vajradhara is the home syllable. So the central figure is, and his entourage are marked with om on top of his head. So since we sometimes do, when we do this kind of deity yoga practice, we say, I transform into a deity, and then you get the feeling that this is something that I have actually thought for myself. But then when you think about the wisdom beings descending into you, and there is some kind of a blessing that comes from out there, as if they are totally different. That's not the way. What we should understand is that the three, body, speech, and mind of a Buddha, is of one taste. And therefore, wherever the mind of the Buddha is, there is the body and the speech of the Buddha. So all these three, in the case of the Buddha, are of one taste. So it's a matter of whether we recognize that or not, and whether we are able to remind ourselves of this fact that the Buddha's body, speech, and mind are of one taste. So all three go together anywhere. As Master Shantideva says in his Bodhisattva Charyavatara, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are able to see everything and everywhere unobstructedly. So Guru Shakyamuni, Vajradhara sent out light and home from the home at his heart and no directions, inviting from their natural abode wisdom beings who resemble those meditated. Once each of them has dissolved into its specific commitment being, think that by nature each includes all objects of refuge, offer the seven part of prayer along with the mandala, and be sure to supplicate them according to masters of instructions. Next, Guru Shakyamuni Vajradhara sends out light and home at his heart, which reaches the great multitude of peaceful, wrathful beings, and they dissolve into light and absorb into Manindra. Manindra in turn dissolves into, so you go through this dissolution process now. And then, having done the dissolution process, present him the abbreviated version of the seven parts, prayer and the mandala offering, and then think that all sentient beings, your mothers who are present around you, together with one voice, together in one voice, supplicate them. So extraordinary master deity, whose nature is that of the bodies, Manindra Vajradhara, I supplicate you, extraordinary master deity, whose nature is that of the Dharma body, free of obscuration, Manindra Vajradhara, I supplicate. So you do the supplication. And especially, it says on page 44, this extraordinary master deity who embodies all objects of refuge, Manindra Vajradhara, I supplicate you. So you are referring to the to your Lama, that he is the embodiment of all the objects of refuge. So all the Lamas, Yidams, and Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Dharma protectors and so forth are embodied in him, and you should have this single-pointed conviction that this is the case. And if I and all my sentient beings have been born in samsara and endlessly subjected to intense suffering, it is due to our failure to rely upon our spiritual master correctly in both thought and deed. Master Deity, please bless me and all sentient beings so that we may henceforth correctly rely upon our spiritual masters in thought and deed. Having supplicated the Master Deity a stream of the stream of light and nectar of five colors flew from all parts of his body onto your head. And so you're here, it says, if it penetrates your mind and body, and all those of all sentient beings. So this is relating to the reliance on a guru here on this part. And then the actual meditation, how to rely upon meditation, how to rely on a master in thoughts, how to rely on them in deeds, cultivating faith, the root, having recalled their kindness, developing veneration for them. So regarding the first, the master, Shakyamuni, is on your crown. For the first, visualize that the masters with whom you have a direct spiritual connection appear from Guru Munindra's heart and place themselves in the space in front of you. So you're visualizing your masters who emanate from the Guru Munindra's heart and in front of you in the space, one on the other. And here you have to think about the qualities, the excellent qualities of the Guru. And even here, you actually visualize or imagine that your gurus in the form or aspect as you actually see him, and except that you do not visualize or you do not think of their faults or defects in their body and so forth. So all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the past, when they have made their prayers and dedication to benefit all sentient beings, and so we are included amongst the sentient beings, and then they became enlightened. And so we have to also submit ourselves to the Guru Buddha, and we also, just as they have traveled through the path and become enlightened, likewise, we also should, we are the ones who are going to engage in the practices and lead along the path, and journey along the path, the five paths, and culminating in both Buddhahood, as the Heart Sutra Mantra, Gate Gate, Paragate, and so forth says. So, of course, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, with this kind of single-pointed concentration that we develop and the conviction, then we have the, and then because we have also the, the opportunity to receive the teaching, and having been born as a human beings, now we also have the opportunity to meet with the gurus, and so who introduces us to the path leading to enlightenment. And so if we had not been taken care of by our masters, what kind of life we would have led, and so we would be just ordinary beings. So because of having met with our masters, we are able to also, due to their kindness, we are able to make to judge what is right and wrong. And so we have this, the whole teaching which leads us in our hands, which leads us to Buddhahood. And so Gyutsan Rinpoche's Lama Rinpoche says that we need to look at the Lama, see the Lama as being full of real qualities, good qualities, and free from all faults. Because we want profit and not looks. So, of course, samsaric existences are there. But in Tantra, we actually transform this in our perception into pure realms. And so whatever appears as emptiness, and what that emptiness also induces the blissful experience. And then we combine bliss and emptiness. So this is for the purpose of realizing the goal, and in the end, and not just... So as Jerembuchi says in this prayer of Guhyasamaja, the purpose of visualizing ourselves into a deity and the pure realms and the Nadal and so forth is to overcome our ordinary perception and ordinary clinging. And so for that purpose, you need to visualize the pure realms. So Gyaltsab Dhamma Rinchen says that we are not actually saying or thinking that this impure realm itself as such is pure. That is not the right kind of correct right kind of cognition. It is a wrong cognition. And so we have our lamas. For example, I have about 20 something lamas. I cannot on my own make the distinction that this lama is actually Buddhist Buddha, and these are others are not Buddhas. And so whether you receive a blessing. The great blessing or small blessing from Lama depends on your own faith. So even if the Lama may be enlightened to a Buddha, if you actually do consider or regard the Lama as totally ordinary being, then you will have ordinary kind of blessing. So since you want profit and not loss, therefore you need to imagine the Lama as a guru. So within the Lama, the main one is the one who is called the Vajra Master, who gives you the four tantric initiations of the highest yoga tantra. So the Lama who gives you the initiation is the main Lama. So there are within the initiation the four initiations, the vast secret knowledge, and then the word initiation. And so someone, a Lama who is able to give this word initiation from experience is necessarily a Buddha. And therefore, if you think there's a great purpose in visualizing the Lama as Guru, Vajradhara, as because there is a great benefit in called imagining the Lama as Vajradhara and Guru, therefore you visualize or regard the Lama as a Guru.
Lama
So we're on page 145 in the old book. And 49 in the new edition. So on page 46 in the old book, and page 156 in the new edition. 150 in the new edition, revised edition. So we are on this outline where it says how to rely upon them indeed. So visualize clearly the spiritual masters before you and think. For the sake of these spiritual masters who are true Buddhas, I will give my body life belongings for without hesitation. I will especially please them with the offering of practicing. According to their words, Master Deity, please bless me so that I may do so. And then you should also dedicate intensely, fervently. So this is about the preliminary, actual, and then the conclusion. So in the end, you make a very firm supplication to the Lama, and the Lama dissolves into you and think that you have a great joy in your heart so that you are going to be taken care of by the Lama. And so in the mere morning, if you do the Lama Guru Yoga, sometimes it is said that you do all the practices within the context of the Guru Yoga. So in the morning, you start with all the beginning, and such as the preliminaries and so forth, and then stop where you come to the point of dissolving the lamas. You stop there before dissolving the lama, and then you can go on with your daily life. And then at the end of your day, before going to bed, you should visualize the lamas and deity again, and then do the dissolution process. So by saying the extraordinary master deity whose nature is that of the four bodies, Manindra, Vajradhara, I supplicate to you and so forth, you should do that kind of dissolution. So for those practicing Mahamudra, when you actually feel the kind of joy of having thought about the Lama's qualities and so forth, then you should meditate on the nature of the mind. Having dissolved the Lama, you should then meditate on the nature of the mind. So what to do between meditation sessions, 151. So please look at the swift path leading to omniscience by Benjamin Lobsang Yishi. The blue book does not have this text, so it's a separate text. So this is the fifth Panchen Lama, Panchen Lobsang Yishi. So we have a partial translation. a part of this translation. So yesterday I said that there is a guided instruction combining this, the swift path and the fifth Dalai Lama's sacred words of Buddha. Perhaps I should do that. I'm changing. So I'll finish these things. So having relied upon the Master, how to progressively train your mind has two paths. Exhortation to take full advantage of a rebirth with freedom. How to take full advantage of it. What to do in actual meditation. What to do between the meditation sessions and the preliminaries. The actual meditation and the conclusion. So the preliminaries I asked before. Extraordinary Master Deity who embodies all objects of refuge, Manindra, Vajra, I supplicate to you. So from the beginning of that supplication to that, and then reflect the fact that I and all Mother Sentient Beings have been born in samsara and are in this state of intense suffering is due to our having failed to achieve a spirit realization of great potential of freedom and fortune and the difficulty of attaining them. Master Deity, please bless me and all sentient beings so that we may achieve a spirit realization of the great potential of freedom and fortune and the difficulty of attaining them. And then next is the actual meditation. So within which there's the contemplating the great potential of freedom and fortune and contemplating the difficulty of attaining them. So while meditating the Master Deity on your head, reflect in the following manner it says, having supplicated the Master then, a stream of light and active five colors flows from all parts of your body, his body, and onto your hands. It penetrates your mind and body and those of all sentient beings. So first you recognize this human life with fortune and freedom, and then you see the significance, great significance of it, and then how difficult it is to find such a human existence. So contemplating the difficulty of attaining them while meditating the Master Deity on your head, reflecting the following manner. So a human life with 8 leisures of freedom and 10 fortunes. So of the 7 billion people on this earth, perhaps 10,000 people may have this complete freedom and fortune. Of course, the number of human beings, those who have attained human life, is many, but there are very few who actually pay attention to the fact that your happiness and suffering actually depends on your own state of mind. So, even amongst the religious practitioners, and then particularly amongst the followers of Buddhism, so as it is said, you should not have committed the irreversible kind of karma, and then having faith in the three baskets of the teaching, you will find, I mean, from the depths of your heart, and also considering cherishing the three trainings of higher trainings, it's very difficult to find. So even if you may be in groups, monastic groups, there are many who are not so serious about the practice of the Dharma. And therefore, it's very few people who have the 18 fortune and freedom. So for such a life, it should come from a complete course. Most of us human beings, nobody needs to, we actually indulge in all kinds of negative actions through the negative, through the three poisons rather effortlessly. And therefore, at this time when you have found this kind of human life, with eight leisures and eight freedoms and ten fortunes, we should dedicate ourselves to the practice of the Dharma. How to take full advantage of it, training the mind. 154, training the mind on the stage of the path shared with lesser beings, training the mind on the stage of the path shared with the intermediate beings, and training the mind on the stage of the path with great beings. The training the mind on the stage of the path shared with lesser beings, what to do in the actual meditation session, what to do between meditation sessions, the preliminaries. The first one has preliminaries, actual and conclusion. The preliminaries I asked before. And then, do this supplication. And having then the actual meditation. Next page. So contemplating death and impermanence, contemplating the suffering of the lower realms, training, taking refuge in the teachings, cultivating faith in the form of conviction in karma and its effects. So while meditating the master deity on your head, reflect in the following manner. So all the Buddhas and Buddhasattvas and the great kings and the powerful kings and so forth who lived in the past are mere memory today. So we, of course, study history and talk about the great legacies left by Master so many different people. And today, they're mere history. We only have their name to remember. So especially those who have really left some legacy of themselves, whether good or bad, having done things which are beneficial to others or harmful to others. So today, we are at the end of 2013. So from now, in 10 years, many of us who are gathered here will be no more. When we reach 2033, and then 20 years from now, more number of people will be no more there. And so, when it comes to 2025, I would be 100 years. So through some practices for longevity, of course, by doing retreat or meditation on longevity deities and so forth, it may help to increase one's or extend one's lifespan. But it may be very, very rare cases in which this can happen. But our life always goes by. Every day, minute, hour, minute, and seconds. So someone in the morning today, who had 10 years to live, has only 9 years And it has actually lived half a day by now. And see, that person is half a day and has half a day less in his life, his or her life. And so life just goes by. And then there's nothing which can actually stop the time from going on. So it is quite a ruinous to oneself if you think that I will first do all these other things and at the end of my life, then when I finish all these works, then I will do the Dharma practice. So due to lack of this intense determination to have a higher rebirth and also the omniscient state, I mean, we just all go we just spend our life just like this without really taking advantage of it. So this life and freedom, so perhaps we can say 99% that we will not die tonight, but we cannot tell for sure 100% that we are not going to die tonight. So this long journey to the enlightenment is depends on the Dharma. So at the time of death, nothing but nothing can help. No wealth can help us. So when I left Tibet in 1959, everything that we had, like the old clothes that belonged to the previous Dalai Lamas and the certain Dalai Lamas belongings, and then things that I also received as gifts from other people, when I fled Tibet, all these I couldn't even think of taking them with me. So when I left Nobulinka, I was quite, I wasn't even sure whether I would actually see the next day or not. And then there are people who have actually fled from Jepung and Sera monasteries. It would have been very good, I mean, very good if you have been able to take your own cups with you. So we all fled only with the wish that we could live a life. The Ladakhis are, you are different. You are in the free country, India. But then with regard to the people from Arunachal Pradesh, they had to flee in 1962. And so, our wealth and riches does not help us, even in this life, not to talk about the next life, but so at the time of death, nothing can help us. No friends and relatives, no wealth. When I die, there may be people who may say that, oh, Dalai Lama is my Lama and my Guru, and therefore I can forsake my life for him. But you cannot come with me at the time of my death. You cannot, even if you may be the best of my best friends, you cannot come with me. So the assemblage of the relatives and so forth are like a heap of wood that would be blown away by the wind. And so this body does not help at the time of death. So
어디 치우세 치마도 관계자 판단매지 년시 지중 치들 치우 타고자 지금 재산이 이동을 어디 공부 진이지 그냥 유대성에 쳐두네 선지집에 쉬르냐 레거나 선지 분석을 차고 지시자
아 So if you have to even separate this part from this body itself, which has come with you at the time of birth, then nothing can be held on to. With so with regard to this mind now, if there is an opposing factor which can actually stop So I recently met a Chilean scientist in Delhi. So he says that he was not sure whether there is a mind which is separate from the brain chemicals reactions. And so some years ago I had a discussion with a Japanese scientist. And so his view was that as long as we have the brain working, then there is a mind, and once we're dead, there is no mind. And so he was full of worries about his own son. But today we have impartial scientists who look at things from a broader perspective. And so they say that it's too early to say there is no mind separate from the brain. Because they say that there is impact on the brain activities from our mental processes. So of course we are also influenced by the activity of the brain, but today these scientists are able to see that even our thought processes alone can impact the mind. So they kind of say that there is, apart from the brain, there is something which can affect the brain itself. So as I said the last days, that there are scientists who believe in a mind that can that is separate from the brain. So they are not saying this just by belief, but by doing investigation. So at the time of death, what there is the disintegratedness of our karma also goes from this life to the next. And so whether you call it an imprint or the continuation of this disintegratedness of karma, that actually links us to the next life. And so at the time of around the time of death, we activate these karmas that we have left, the imprints or the disintegratedness of these karmas that are left on the in our mind are reactivated and revitalized, and then we go into the next life. So at the time of when we are about to die, so the mere eye is where this imprints or whatever we call is left.
So
So at that time, when we are able to think about altruism and so forth, it can leave a very powerful imprint on our mind. So someone who is very familiar with the virtuous states of mind, then at that point, when you are about to die, they are merely reflecting on virtuous virtues, and they are able to recall the virtues. So it is similar to someone who is very familiar and having acquainted with themselves with emptiness, that they are able to remind themselves of emptiness, and as they go through the dissolution process and at the clear light state. So there's no certainty about the time of death. You may die tonight. So what helps us in the next life is the imprints that are left of the virtues that you have left. So acquainting your mind with intense so by way of preparation on page 155 on the actual meditation, may I practice teaching purely free from attachment. So in the world we give education to people for make living in the end, and so the education giving receiving education itself is not the goal, but it is a means to actually achieve that goal. And therefore, on a daily basis, we should actually acquaint ourselves with the virtues. And so, in order to be able to do that well, you should actually think that you should not think that I still have time to practice Dharma, but start doing the practice from now. So, having supplicated the Master Deity, a stream of light nectar of the five colors flows from all our parts of his body onto your head and so forth. So next is the contemplating suffering of lower realms on page 156 in the new revised version. And on page 52 in the old book, new blue book, please read through the book. So we covered the miseries of hell realm, hungry ghost. So the hell realms are something which are very obscure to us, very hidden from us. And then with regard to animals, the hungry ghosts, and also, and then with regard to the animal realm, there's the, of course, animals that we can see around us. If we look at the cats, dogs, and so forth, we can see how helpless they are. For human beings, when we become sick, we can go to hospitals and so forth, but in the animal realm, they do not have such facilities. So of course we have animal husbandry and hospitals for animals and so forth, but they are actually owned by human beings, but not by the animals themselves. So people who have pets, they can actually treat their dogs and cats and so forth, but those without masters, they do not receive such treatments. And so they are not able to help even themselves well. So if we were born into such a realm, what would it be like? So you would feel unbearable, perhaps. So if we have the complete karma for rebirth into animal realm, then we would be reborn as animals in the next life. So I am not capable of bearing the likes of lower realm suffering. Now that I have attained a life basis complete with freedom and fortune, that is so it's difficult to attain, and once attained, so meaningful may I achieve Guru Buddha and so forth. So with regards to the hell realm, it is what is said, mentioned in the Kala Chakra and the Abhidhamma texts are different. So regarding the location of the hell realm mentioned in the Abhidhamma Kosha text, we still need to see if this could be taken literally. So when we see text mentioning different things that are actually very hidden from us in different ways, then we could actually at least see that they were taught for some purpose. And then in the sutras, there are also mention of different worlds. Some are round, some are flat, and square, and so forth. So we need, when we check these different teachings, whether they are consistent or inconsistent, for what is taught in the beginning and later and so forth, we still need to check them. And then, may Master Deity please bless me so that I may be able to do so. Having supplicated the Master Deity, assuming light of nectar, and light of nectar of five colors flows from all parts of his body and so forth. And then training in taking refuge in the three jewels, all parts of the Master Deity's body on your head, emit an assembly consisting of spiritual masters, tutelary deities, the spirit, three jewels, heroes, heroines, dharma protectors, and dark guardians that fill space. Visualize clearly the object of refuge surrounding the Master Deity on your head, keeping in mind the good qualities of the above speech and mind activity. Think henceforth. Please protect me and all other sentient beings from the fears of psychic existence as a whole and from those of the lower realms. With intense inspiration, say, I take refuge in the masters and the deities and the three jewels. So virtuous karmas give rise only to pleasurable experiences, and not suffering. Non-virtuous karmas give rise to only to suffering and not happiness. So cultivating faith in the form of conviction of karma and its effects while meditating the Master Deity on your hands, reflect the following. The conqueror scriptures say that from the cause, that is the practice of virtue, only happiness can result, not suffering. From the cause, that is non-virtuous conduct, only suffering can result, not happiness. Although one may perform only minor virtuous, and unless something opposes them, each gives rise to results of great magnitude. If you perform neither virtue nor sin, you will experience either happiness or nor suffering, neither happiness nor suffering. If nothing opposes the virtue or sin you perform, the action done will not go wasted. It is certain to produce either happiness or misery. Furthermore, So this completes. So we are done with the explanation of training of the mind on the stages of the path shared with lesser beings, and next is the training the mind on the path shared with intermediate beings, within which there are these subsections: developing the aspiration to liberation, establishing the nature of the path leading to liberation, what to do in actual meditation session, what to do between meditation session, the preliminaries, the actual meditation, and the conclusion. So the preliminaries, as before, and then reflect the fact that I and all sentient beings have been born in samsara and are in this state of intense suffering is due to them having failed to understand their cyclic existence by nature is pure suffering, and to generate a strong wish to do to be free of it. Master Daddy, please bless me. So that once we have understood the second thing by nature, pure suffering, we may have the strong wish to be free of it. And then an actual meditation has two parts, contemplating suffering from sanjana and contemplating specific sufferings. Regarding the first, while meditating on Lama Deity on your heads, reflecting the following manner. So moreover, once born in cyclical existence and so forth, it says, my enemies become friends and my friends become enemies. There is no certainty regarding harm and health. When I enjoy something pleasure, samsaric pleasure, I cannot possibly feel fully satisfied, and I enforce my attachment, which produces endless and abundant suffering. No matter how wonderful the bodies I attain, I am forced to give them up repeatedly. There is no certainty regarding the bodies required. Since beginningless time, again and again I have taken birth. There is no apparent end to birth. No matter how wonderful the samsaric excellence I achieve, in the end I will be compelled to give it up. There is no certainty regarding excellence achieved. So I have, I'm obliged to move. So this So under the outline, contemplating the specific sufferings, now once appropriate aggregates have been produced, I cannot avoid what is by nature suffering. So this is what he's always saying, that's the important thing to, the most important thing to reflect on with regard to suffering. So this is evident from the three lower ranks, having attained human appropriate aggregates and so forth. So in appropriate aggregates are the basis for birth, aging, illness and death, and like in this life and later manifest suffering and the suffering of change, both in the present life and the future. When appropriate aggregates are produced, their production is by nature a composition that is conditioned by karma and kleshas. For that reason, by all means, may I attain Guru Buddha and so on. So we don't need to go into the very obscure phenomena regarding this, but if we can actually relate to ourselves in this life, we can see that the kleshas are the ones which give us, cause us unhappiness. And so kleshas by nature are said to be that which no sooner they arise in our mind, disturbs our peace of mind, equilibrium. So for oneself, it is a source of suffering. making us unhappy and to lose our peace of mind. And then when you look at others in the world, lots of problems and difficulties we face today in the world are our own creation, human creation. And this is because of, not because we want suffering, but because of our ignorance, due to which we have become attached or have become angry. And therefore, once you see that this is something, these negative emotions are something, those which we do not want, then this kind of body that we have attained, the aggregates that we have attained now, that has come through karma and kleshas, is something which is unwanted as well. And therefore, you will want to go out of this kind of samsara existence. So having for that reason, by all means, may I attain Guru Buddha Hood that frees me from samsara, which by nature is appropriate aggregates must update. Please bless me so that I may be able to do so. So the way to conclude is as before, between meditation sessions as before. And then instruction the nature of the path leading to liberation, what to do in the actual meditation, what to do in between sessions, and the preliminaries, the actual meditation, and the conclusion. In the preliminaries, the fact that I and all other sentient beings have been born in samsara, and then the subject intense suffering is due to our failure to cultivate the three higher trainings correctly. Once we have developed the inspiration of liberation, so if you can see the fault of negative emotions, then what you can see is the cultivation of insight or wisdom is our goal, because this is the factor which will actually uproot the course of samsara. Now, in order for this kind of wisdom to be to have a powerful one, and this kind of wisdom, then we need a very powerful concentration, single-pointed concentration. Therefore, we need to cultivate it, and this kind of training of concentration must come through the practice of mindfulness and introspection. And therefore, the beginning, what we should base on for this, for mindfulness inspection, is the practice of morality, of consciousness, which must come on the basis of morality. And so we should see how kleshas or negative emotions actually brings us suffering, and mainly this grasping a true existence causes us suffering. And so, study this, and then study about this, and then you also think about this within yourself. So the actual meditation, so although consciousness on its own is by nature ethically neutral in relation to I and mind, the thought that they are naturally established arises first. Then on the basis of this mode of apprehension of I arise various kinds of wrong thinking, such as attachment to what is on my side, anger towards what is on the other side, as well as pride that makes me feel superior to others. On their basis arise doubt and wrong views that deny the existence of a guide who taught selflessness and of his teaching karma and its effects, the four truths, the three jewels, and so on. Based on these, the other clashes develop. Having accumulated karma under the influence, I am obliged to experience a wide variety of suffering and cycling. Therefore, ultimately, the root of all suffering is ignorance. ignorance. May I, by all means, attain Guru Buddha that frees me from the root of samsara sufferings. For that purpose, may I correctly train the qualities that are three precious higher trainings. And in particular, I wish that I may correctly guard the ethical disciplines to which I have committed myself, even at the cost of my life, since guarding them is beneficial and failing to do so extremely harmful. Since ignorance is the root of transgression, is its antidote. I hear and learn about the precepts, since disrespect is the door of transgressions. As its antidote, may I respect the guide, the precepts he's established, and those of pure conduct, my companions who train in the precepts. Since carelessness is the door to transgression, as its antidote, may I be conscientious, cultivate remembrance, watchfulness, respect, self-respect, and concentration. Since an abundance of pleasures is a door to transgression, having meditated ugliness as the remedy to attachment, love as the remedy to anger, and dependent arising as the remedy to ignorance, may I correctly train so as to make my ethical discipline pure, unsullied, but in transgressions. May Master Deity please bless me so that I may be able to do so. So then, this concludes the explanation of training of the stages of the path shared with intermediate beings. Next is the third point, training in the mind on the stages of the paths of great beings. So within this, there are these six or seven outlines, how to develop the spirit of enlightenment, having developed the spirit, the bodhicitta, how to train in bodhisattva practice, having developed, developing the bodhicitta as such, how to maintain the spirit and bodhicitta through ritual, and how to train your mind according to the seven-point instruction, cause and effect, and how to train your mind equalizing, changing self and others. Regarding the first, having first developed equanimity towards all sentient beings, you then meditate the recognition of them as your mothers up to the spirit of enlightenment. What to do in the actual meditation session, what to do in between sessions. Then there is the preliminary, the actual meditation, the conclusion. The preliminary is as before, and then the actual meditation. Please read on. So while meditating the meditation master deity on your head, visualize clearly before you a being toward whom you feel indifferent, one who has neither helped you nor harmed you, and think, since she wants to be happy and does not want to suffer, may I develop a commitment towards her, free of bias, attachment, and anger, without at times feeling close to her or helping her, and at others feeling distant and harming her. May Master Deity please bless me so that I may be able to do so, having supplicated Master Deity and stream lightning. And nectar of five colors flows from the from all parts of its body on your crown.
Kalanda Tadunya Mom,
So when it comes to cultivating bodhicitta through utilizing exchanging others, self and others, they are more. It is more hinges on the what is obvious that we can see empirically, whereas the developing bodhicitta from the through the other system of the sevenfold instruction is based on the something which is obscure to us. So, page 169, to meditate love, realize someone, you are close to your mother, and think as follows. Then comes the meditation on compassion. To meditate compassion, while visualizing the master deity on your hand, first imagine a miserable being in the throes of suffering, like a deep sheep being slaughtered by a butcher. For this, first clearly picture the animal before you, its limbs bound, its chest cut up and open, the butcher plunging his hand inside its chest, it knowingly and perfectly well that its life is at stake, and it goggling at the butcher's face. Having contemplated the way this torment creates great anguish in the sheep, think how nice it would be if I were free from suffering and the cause of suffering. May it be free from suffering and all its causes. I shall ensure that it is free of suffering and all its causes. Master Deity, please bless me so that I may be able to do so. Please read on.
Having supplicated the Master Deity, a stream of light and nectar of the five colors flows from all parts of his body onto your head. It penetrates your mind and body and those of all sentient beings. It removes all the sins and obscurations you have accumulated since beginning its time, and especially purifies you of all the illnesses, bad spirits, sins, and obstructions that interfere with ensuring that these mothers are free of suffering and all its causes. Your body becomes translucent of the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit, and so forth expand and increase. Think in particular that you have a superior realization of the intention to ensure that these matters are free of suffering and of the causes of suffering has arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. Page number 174. How to train your mind in equalizing and exchanging self and others. And here, the practicing of equanimity is emphasized to be practiced first, and then think about all the sentient beings as one's mother. And as I explained yesterday, so even gradually, we have to meditate in such a way that even those who are considered as one's enemies are also came into the purview of those sentient beings to whom one practices the compassion. So the kindness that everyone have upon us, including one's enemies, so if we think from different views and different angles, so it's actually same. And one of the main reasons is that everyone is same in the sense that they all wish to have happiness and do not wish to have suffering. So the practice of exchanging self and others is highly emphasized in the engaging in the days of Bodhisattva by Shantideva. The preliminaries are as before. Extraordinary Master Deity, who embodies all objects of refuge, Munindra Vajradhara, I supplicate you. Then, O Master Deity, please bless me and all sentient beings that the precious spirit of enlightenment by which we cherish others more than ourselves may arise in us. Having supplicated the Master Deity, a stream of light and nectar of five colors, flows from all parts of his body onto your head. It penetrates your mind, body, and those of the sentient beings. The actual meditation, having first developed equanimity that levels your feelings towards all sentient beings and meditated on the three, recognizing them all as your mothers, recalling their kindness, visualize clearly all sentient beings around you and ask yourself, in my heart, who do I cherish most, myself or others? When you determine that you tend naturally to cherish yourself and neglect others, reflect in the following terms. It is not right to cherish myself and neglect others if we are all equal in our desire for happiness and our wish to avoid suffering. Hence, I need to cherish others as I cherish myself. For just as being treasured by others please me, so will others be pleased when I treasure them. Page number 175, the last para. And here, so here the training through the equalizing of self, equalizing and exchanging self and others is in fact even more powerful than the 7-point cause and effect. In brief, Manindra achieved complete Buddhahood by disregarding himself, cherishing others and devoting himself exclusively to their welfare. By following his example, I too will achieve Buddhahood very soon. Having failed to do so until now, I have wandered in samsara. As long as I continue to harbor self-cherishing within me, I will not be able to cultivate cherishing others, or if I do, I will not manage to maintain that attitude. Thus may the thought to cherish myself and neglect others not arise in me. Even for an instant, may I give up my selfish concern and treasure others, take upon myself other sentient beings' suffering and sin entirely, and offer others all my happiness and goodness. 176. How to maintain the spirit of enlightenment through ritual. The preliminaries are as before. Page number 177. Imagining that you are repeating the words of the Guru Mahindra says, I pray all Buddhas and Bodhisattva, please heed me. Just as the skradas of the past generate the spirit of enlightenment and in Bodhisattva precepts, train step by step. I too, for the sake of sentient beings, generate the spirit of enlightenment and in Bodhisattva precepts, shall train step by step. Having repeated these verses three times, think that you have attained the Bodhisattva vows. Next, to rejoice, say, today my life has become fruitful. I have successfully attained a human life. Today I have been born into the Buddha family and have now become a child of the Buddhas. From now on, whatever I do will be in harmony with that family. This faultless class of ethics, I will do nothing to taint. Page number 178. Once taken, how to keep them from declining? While meditating the Master Deity on your head, reflect in the following manner. For the sake of all sentient beings, my mothers, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, by reflecting on the benefits of the spirit of enlightenment three times a day and three times a night, I shall keep my promise to maintain the spirit of enlightenment. No matter how sentient beings behave or what they do, I shall never banish a single one of them from my heart. To reinforce the spirit of enlightenment I have generated, I shall strive to accumulate the two collections by making offerings to the three jewels and so forth. Furthermore, I shall refrain from what causes the spirit of enlightenment to decline, such as the four black deeds, misleading my gurus and so forth with lies, be it in jest or in play, causing others to regret the good they have done, speaking unpleasantly in order to the Bodhisattvas who have entered the great vehicle and being hypocritical and deceitful without higher intention. In brief, until I have achieved the essence of enlightenment, even at the cost of my life, I shall thoroughly respect the Bodhisattva vows and never let them be tainted by the 18 major and 46 secondary transgressions. I pray to the Master Deity to bless me that I may not be able to do so. I may be able to do so. Having sublocated the Master Deity, a stream of light, a nectar of five colors, flows from all parts of his body onto your head. It penetrates your mind and body and those of the sentient beings. It removes all the sins and obstructions you have accumulated since beginningless time, and specially purifies you of all the illnesses, bad spirits, sins and obstructions that interfere with training and the precepts. Once you have generated the wish for supreme enlightenment in its aspirational and engaged forms, your body becomes translucent of the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit and so forth, expand and increase. Think in particular that a superior realization of training in the precepts, once you have generated the wish for supreme enlightenment in its aspirational and engaged forms, have arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. Having developed the spirit of enlightenment, how to train in Bodhisattva practice? Page number 179. The preliminaries are as before. Extraordinary Master Deity, who embodies all objects of refuge, so we're turning to page number 82. So in between this, His Holiness has already read about how to train in the six perfections to ripen your mind, and also the first of the six perfections, the perfection of generosity, has been read, and ethical discipline, patience has been read, and this wisdom and concentration. And now well, page number 183, the perfection of wisdom. Next, for the practice of wisdom, while meditating the Master Deity on your head, reflect in the following manner. For the sake of all sentient beings, my mothers, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, may I train in all aspects of Bodhisattva wisdom. The wisdom realizing the ultimate, perceiving reality. The wisdom realizing the relative, five senses. The wisdom realizing the way to accomplish sentient beings' welfare. Master Deity, please bless me so that I may be able to do so. Having supplicated the Master Deity, a stream of light, a nectar of the five colors, flows from all parts of his body onto your head. It penetrates your mind and body and those of all sentient beings. It removes all the sins and obstructions you have accumulated since beginningless time. Second is the outline of the practice of the four methods of gathering to ripen the minds of others. While meditating the Master Deity on your heart, reflect in the following manner. For the sake of all sentient beings, my mothers, may quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, may I gather all sentient beings by being generous, speaking pleasantly, correcting them, caring for them, and explaining the teaching to them. And in between this, now we are already in the outline of training in the last two perfections. In particular, has two parts. How to train in meditative serenity, the essence of concentration, and special insight. There are general and specific preliminaries. For the latter, you are to train in the attitudes of the lesser and intermediate beings, and in a conducive salute secluded environment, including good companions whose thinking is in harmony with yours, maintain pure ethical discipline, give up associating with many beings, and curse thoughts of attraction to objects of desire, sustain few desires and be content with less, sit on a comfortable seat, your body straight, your legs in worship posture, your hands in the meditative absorption position, calm your breathing, and so forth. Having thus prepared the condition for reaching meditative serenity for the actual meditation, although the Buddha taught many objects in relation to which serenity can be achieved, the prime object and the ideal one is the recollection of the Buddha, as it serves many purposes, like rating you for meditating Tantra Yoga Deity. It is good to visualize the deity's form. So here the line reads that you one need to visualize as the rainbows in the skies, but in the sense of being empty. But the actual thing is that one need to think about the emptiness of all the phenomena. We are sorry, the very in the page number 186, the vote before was think that your winds and the minds have merged with the sky. So here the merge with the sky means meditating emptiness of all the phenomena. Well, page number 187, the way to conclude is as before. Between meditation sessions, as before, you should read canonical and commentarial works that explain the system of meditative serenity, how to train in spiritual insight, the essence of wisdom. There is explained in the context of meditative serenity. More specifically, while correctly relying on a learned spiritual master, you should receive instruction on spiritual insight. Ardently supplicate the master's inseparable from the deity, strive to purify and accumulate, and so on. Combining the three is indispensable prerequisite to the realization of the views. The actual meditation has two parts. The way to meditate once the selflessness of person has been established and once the selflessness of phenomena has been established. Although in his discourses the conqueror taught innumerable logical reasonings to establish selflessness, since ascertaining it through the four key points is easier for beginners, the way to do so is as follows. The thought may be that your mind tightly apprehends from the depth of your heart, and when sunk in the deep sleep is the innate apprehension of self. When our concentration level sinks down, so at that time it will be helpful to contemplate about the empty nature of the sky in front of you. Then a strong apprehension of your eye appears from deep within you, and the very inner grasping of self apprehends your eye becomes clear. That is the time for a small part of your mind to examine the eye that the mind grabs and how it grabs it. If the mind is too strong, the former perception will disappear, and as there will be nothing left to examine, you will not succeed. Hence, the major part of the mind should consistently be aware of eye and only a small but examine it. When you analyze, consistently be aware of the eye, only small but examine it. Sorry, when you analyze it, the basis on which the innate apprehension of the eye grabs the eye are the five aggregates, your body and mind, and nothing else. Not on the basis of any of the five aggregates individually, or on the basis of the body or mind individually. It is on the global basis of the five aggregates as a group, or the body and mind as a group, that the innate apprehension of the eye grabs the eye as having always existed on its own, not as a mere imputation by the conception on this basis. This eye, which is the object of apprehension, is the object of negation to be refuted. It must be ascertained not just by understanding someone else's explanation or by mere verbal images, but from within yourself. This is the key point, first key point, the key point of ascertaining the way the object to be negated appears. Regarding the second key point, ascertaining the range of possibilities, reflect as follows. The eye, which is apprehended tightly in the depths of my heart, but the perception that things of eye exist in relation to the five aggregates, is it one with the five aggregates or distinct from them? A third mode of existence other than these two are absolutely impossible. Any existent, whatever it is, must have either an aspect of unity or an aspect of multiplicity.
Kansa
So we also need to draw a distinction between the two kinds of grasping of self as an inherent existence. The first one being the grasping the self as existing substantially without depending upon its five aggregates. So such a kind of grasping is something that we cannot imagine or we cannot contemplate on objects such as a pot or even the five aggregates. So the mind that grabs the object or grabs the self as self-sustaining is only that we can only think about on the person or the self. Moreover, if the I that's apprehended is established as one with the five aggregates, as the five aggregates arise and disintegrate, but in the last para of page 188, so would I, established by the consciousness ever that it stands on its own, have to arise and disintegrate. If that were the case, would the I that arises and disintegrates be one with or distinct from its previous and its subsequent moments of existence? If you were to consider it to be one with them, then the I of the previous life, of the present life, and of the subsequent life, would all three be one and partless? So when Jesus Sharamsinghe gives the teaching, the first he speaks about the selflessness of a person, then later the selflessness of phenomena. So it's important that first one has a brief understanding about what is the selflessness of the person. Then once we have generated such a kind of understanding, then gradually we can move to another focal object of the five aggregates and think of them as selflessness. Because even though the person may not be existing in the same manner on the five aggregates, but there is a possibility that the person can be designated or imputed upon the five aggregates. So therefore, it is helpful in understanding the real nature of the person or the self. And this way, the order is such that first the selflessness of the person is being taught, and after that, the selflessness of phenomena. So this order is very helpful for practice. Page number 189. In addition, if the I thus apprehended were one with the aggregates, since they would be inherently one, they would have to be completely and utterly one. If that were the case, it would conflict with the I, or self being the appropriator of the five aggregates, with the five aggregates being what is appropriated by the I or self, and self, and so forth. Therefore, conclude that the I thus apprehended is not one with the five aggregates. Regarding the four key points, ascertaining the lack of inherent plurality. Although the I thus ascertained is not established as one with the five aggregates, if you think, perhaps it is established as distinct from the aggregates. Just as once you have eliminated each of the four aggregates, the aggregate of form, etc., there remains the aggregate of consciousness that can be recognized distinctly. Once you have eliminated each of the five aggregates that are form, etc., you should be able to identify distinctly an I thus apprehended, but that is not possible. Consequently, conclude that the I thus apprehended is not established as distinct from the five aggregates. By analyzing the four key points, once you have ascertained that the I, as apprehended by the innate grasping at I, does not exist, meditate on that ascertainment continually and one-pointedly, free of laxity and excitement. If the ascertainment weakens slightly, beginners, as before, should revert to an analysis of the four key points and induce the ascertainment of the lack of inherent existence. Those with higher faculties will analyze whether the I, as it appears to innate grasping at I, exists or not. On that basis, they can elicit the ascertainment of non-inherent existence in a way similar to the analysis of the four key points. At that point, the way to meditate space-like concentration is to meditate one-pointedly. The combination of the two from the angle of confirmation, the firm ascertainment of non-inherent existence, and from the angle of appearance, the ascertainment of the void, that is simple absence of the object of negation, inherent existence. Subsequent to it, meditate the illusion-like display of the I, and so forth, that is all phenomena. In addition, by the strong ascertainment of non-inherent existence in meditative absorption, subsequently trained in inducing the appearance of a false and illusion-like display, according to which all that manifests ultimately appears like inherent existence. So this looks quite similar to what has been read before. So maybe it is a difference between the graspings as being subtle or gross. So when we speak about emptiness, to understand any negative phenomena, eliminating is the object of negation. So since emptiness by itself is a negative of non-affirming negative, so once we refute it or negate the object of negation, there is nothing, no object or positive things coming from the other side. But if someone is practicing Tantra in Vajrayana tradition, then there may be a reason or there may be a purpose to even practice while thinking about the emptiness, that we can think about an object arising out of it. Page number 190, the way to meditate once the selflessness of phenomena is established. The way to meditate, once composite phenomena's lack of true nature is established. For the first, take the example of a body. On the basis of a body, which is a simple collection of five limbs made of tangible flesh and bones, what appears to us unmistakably is a whole body that stands on its own and does not exist as a mere imputation by conception. This is how the object to be negated appears. If such a body existed in relation to the body, that is just a collection of the five limbs made of tangible flesh and bones, would it be one with or distinct from the body? That is a simple collection of five limbs made of tangible flesh and bones. If it is one with it, as the body that is a simple collection of five limbs made of tangible flesh and bones were produced by its parent sperm and egg, the drop of sperm and the egg that was the basis into which the consciousness entered would be the body that is a simple collection of five limbs made of tangible flesh and bones. Moreover, just as it has five limbs, so too would the body that is a collection of five parts be multiplied by five. If they were distinct, once you have eliminated each limb, the head and so forth, you should be able to point to a body, but you cannot. Once you have generated a sentiment that thinks, in no way does such a body exist, meditate on that. Take today's consciousness as an example. If there is a today's consciousness which does not exist, as a mere imputation by conception on the basis of this morning's consciousness and this afternoon's consciousness, be it one or distinct from this morning and this afternoon's consciousness. If it is one with them on the basis of this morning consciousness, you will find this afternoon consciousness. If they are distinct after eliminating this morning's consciousness, this afternoon's consciousness, you should be able to point to a today's consciousness, but you cannot. Once you have generated a sentiment that thinks there is no such consciousness, meditate on that as before. Page number 191. Take a period of time, such as a year, or as an example. If there were a year that exists from its own side and not just as an imputation by a conception on a year's basis of designation, 12 months, would it exist as one with the 12 months or as distinct from them? If they were one just as they are 12 months, so would they have to be 12 years. If they were distinct, once you have eliminated each of the 12 months, you should be able to point to a year, but you cannot. Once you have generated a sentiment that thinks there is no such year, meditate on it as before. The way to meditate one's non-composite phenomena's lack of true nature is established. So we're at page number 192, the thought of the incomparable masters of cane sugar clan, elucidated by the glorious and excellent Dipamkara and his spiritual science, and the second Buddha, Jay Lobsang Drogba, is present here concisely in the order for practice as a method for fortunate ones to travel to liberation. I teach here Lobsang Shugyi Kenzen taught a practical exposition of the stages of the path that is about to travel to omniscience based on my notes to the large and complete assembly of monks during a summer retreat. Note were taken at that time, which I was shown and which I then corrected. May the ensuing work be a victory banner for precious never deadline teaching. And many of my friends memorized the whole text of Easy Path, and they recite daily and meditate upon it. So this is really acknowledgeable and remarkable. So today, since it's the Mahaparinirvana of Lama Tsongkhapa, we will recite the Pandensa Summa, or the combination of the three grounds composed by Chidu Rinpoche. And does the Sarilachi recite the secret prayers of Lama Tsongkhapa? So normally you recite it during the great Molam Chemo. The secret practice, secret life story of Lama Tsongkhapa. So if you do not, cannot recite by heart clearly, then better leave it. So you cannot trust upon me. I can remember only a few sentences and words. So first we will recite Pandensa Summa. It is the combination of three spiritual grounds composed by Chidu Rinpoche. It's really very precious. And after that, I think we have done that before here. We try to recite the text of interpretable and definitive by Lama Tsongkhapa. But of course, if you have memorized the whole text, it's really great. But even if you have not memorized, you can if you can recite till the Chittamatran part or even the Sautantrika part, then it will be wonderful. But if you have, if you are not not much related, or if you do not have much idea about the interpretable and definitive texts by Lama Tsongkhapa, then you can also recite the serenity and the special insights side of the Lam Rim Chemo. So this will be a perfect way to celebrate today, a special day.